Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody out there. Friday Night Lights, and we are under them, or around them, or somewhere near them, I'm sure. Anyway, this program is sponsored by P4P Muscle. And Muscle, however you want to say it, I'll accept it. The number one drug-free sponsorship foundation in the world. And if you see how I said that, you know that's power. But anywho, if you are a drug-free athlete and are looking for a solid foundation to stand on, or basically, it's whatever, and a vehicle to drive your goals, like what that?
Like a Mack truck with ice cream.
And wait for the
My
echo, and then, and now let's talk.
Why is it always so funny to you how I say that? You're going to give me a complex.
Dude, oh, I just want to cuddle it when you say it. It's like, oh.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Like,
so can I just say?
You think the power of Max, you think about.
I've had a couple cookies today. Kaylin just
had
a
snack. Oh, here we go.
So you can tell that we're good and we're good and carved up. We're ready to rock and roll, folks. We're ready to rock and roll.
Yeah,
we've got the power turned on, and we've got a special show.
Ready to rock
and
roll. Yeah, we're ready to rock
and
roll.
We're ready to do it to it. We're ready to rock and roll. We're ready to do it to it.
Yeah.
Kaylin, set it up for us tonight. No mug cake.
Oh, yes. We have a gentleman on that's part of the P4P family in more ways than one. I'm talking about David the Hound. Look it. Hey, Dave. How's it going, buddy?
Hey, Kaylin. That's a good introduction. For those of you don't mind, there was a second delay there at the beginning because I was actually distracting Kaylin before he did his intro. So sorry for that, guys. I'm a goofy SOB, as you guys know. So yes, I was distracting Kaylin at the beginning. So my fault. Sorry. Oops.
Absolutely. And before David gets started with introducing himself further, in case you don't know, P4P Muscle has a family of podcasts that they have pulled together. So Kaylin and I are one with P4P Real Talk. And then you've had, or you heard Melissa Spencer with Fit Talk with Melinda. Sorry,
yes.
I think I just called her Melissa. I think that's a throwback from last night's show, but we'll let that one go. So Melinda Spencer, Fit Talk with Melinda. And now we have the third leg to this trio, which is, and I can't howl like Cameron did, so I'm not even going to try, but David the Hound Legit, who has his podcast called Beyond Ultra. And David, I'll let you take it from here and further telling our listeners about you.
Oh, right on. Thank you. I really appreciate the fantastic intro from both of you guys. It's definitely beats my theme song. No, I'm just kidding. I like my theme song. JB actually hooked me up with that theme song. So, you know, we're rolling along. So Desiree and Kaylin, basically how I became into the world of P4P, I had always run my entire life. So growing up, I was always a runner. At like 10 or 11 years old, I was winning a lot of like medals for age groups and being like the youngest one out there at races at 5Ks and things of that. As I grew up, I got into baseball, golf, definitely active sports, if you will. I know people probably like golf, but hey, you know what? I used to get out of school 3 days a week at 11 a.m. to go play golf. So who's the sucker, right? Everybody was like, oh, you play golf. Yeah, well, I'm leaving 11 a.m. to go play golf. So you know what I mean? I was actually the captain of the golf team in high school. So, you know, I was happy with that, lettered in that sport. From there, I graduated. I actually gave up running and all kinds of sports for quite some time, focused on my professional career. For those of you that don't know, I've actually been broadcasting in a while now. I never used to talk about it. I am a full-time police officer. I'm actually a police lieutenant in the city of Reading, Pennsylvania. So I started focusing on that. At one point in my career, I actually got injured to the point where I had 4 bones taken out of my left hand. We got into a bad fight with a guy. Yeah. We got into a bad fight with a guy. when we got to the call, I guess the family had reported that he was holding a small infant child out of a window, threatening to drop the kid if he didn't get money for drugs. So when we got there and we ended up trying to arrest him, the other five people in the house decided that they didn't want their loved one arrested, jumped on us. We fought for quite some time, and I lost four bones in my hand. So from there, and this is where my story gets interesting. If anybody reads on other sponsor websites and things like that, they'll see that I developed an outstanding amount of depression. Just being injured and laying around for 11 months, not being able to do anything. I got fat. I got lazy. When I finally got back to work 11 and a half months later, I would wake up. When I would go downstairs after waking up, I would just lay on the couch and basically just lay there until it was time to go to work. And this would be repeated for a good 2 years. At some point, I ballooned up to 240 pounds. So you'll see photos of me out there being real heavy. It was just from depression. And the fact that I think the depression set in is because I couldn't really use my left hand. Once I had had the four bones removed, I have an extreme amount of limitations. I'm actually left-handed dominant, too. So that basically threw me for a loop. So I finally vowed in about 2009 that I would start losing the weight and stop feeling sorry for myself. And I remember, and you guys are going to laugh, I got onto an elliptical, and I could only do 5 minutes on the elliptical. I was sweaty. I was breathing heavy. I was like, this is the worst thing I'd ever done in my life. It was horrible. It was horrible. I just wanted to go back to my couch and give up again. I decided to keep pushing myself, and lo and behold, everything got easier. 5 minutes turned into 15 minutes, 15 to 20, and then so on and so forth till I was up like an hour on this elliptical. I remembered I was like, hey, you know, I used to run a lot. Started running. And the rest is history. I run ultra marathons now, which I guess we could talk about if you want a little bit. I really enjoy it. A lot of people say, why do you enjoy running? It's actually my way to get away from all of my daily stresses. As you can imagine, my job, you know, it's stressed 8 hours a day as soon as I walk in the door, which is fine. I'm used to it. I've been used to it for a long time. But running for me is my outlet for stress relief. So I lost all the weight. I actually lost 90 pounds in 6 months, which was completely unhealthy. Wow. I didn't consult a doctor. Yeah. I stopped. I just went, you know what? I want to lose the weight. I went from 240 pounds to 150, which is, yeah, not so good. From there, like I said, I got into endurance sports. I tried my first triathlon. But while I was training for triathlon, I actually noticed a abnormal rhythm in my heart. And this is going to be interesting, too, because people are going to be like, why are you an endurance athlete? The abnormal rhythm is actually atrial fibrillation, which occurs when the body's composition changes around the heart and the muscles and everything can't keep up. It causes the heart to misfire. So my actual resting heart rate when I used to sit around before I actually had this checked out was about 140 beats a minute. So it was almost like I was working out all the time.
Wow.
Yeah,
amazing, right? So while I was going through that, one of my friends had brought up wanting to run a 50K. And I remember at the time thinking, you're crazy. 50K is 31 miles. It's on a trail. And I was like, absolutely not. You know, I'm running a half marathon. I said the week after, and I was running a 10 mile or the week after that. And that was pretty much a distance I only wanted to do, 10 miles and a half marathon. And I even thought those were excessive. That friend of mine actually was shot and killed in the line of duty while they were serving a high-risk warrant. As a homage to him, we decided to run this 50K as a memorial.
50?
Just, you know, because, yeah, 50K, Kalen.
Say that three times fast.
Yeah, that's 31 miles. So it's 10 5Ks, 31 miles. I didn't even train for it. I remember my wife and family going, you're nuts. I didn't train. I didn't, you know, the most I'd run was five. I used to run 5Ks as training. So we went out. I ran this 50K. It took like, oh my God, it was like 7.5 hours. It was miserable.
Oh my God.
But it was a fun miserable. It was a fun miserable because, you know, I remember thinking the entire time, you know, this is in honor of my friend. So I'm going to finish. I don't care if I have to crawl, I'm going to finish. And I remember crossing the finish line going, whew, never again. A year later, the same race came up, and I said, yeah, you know what? I will do it again. So I made myself a liar. you know, you tell yourself never again. You go, you know what? Maybe I'll try it again.
Punishment.
Oh, but let me go back. Ironically, before that first 50K, 2 weeks earlier, because of my heart rhythms, they decided that I needed heart surgery. So 2 weeks before that 50K, I actually had heart surgery. Yeah. So I went out and ran. So 2 weeks after I had heart surgery.
Crazy.
This is where it gets even more fun. The first heart surgery didn't take. So 3 months later, I had to do another heart surgery. Right. So I had a second heart surgery like 3 or 4 months after the first one. 2 weeks after that one, I ran a 30K trail run. So that's 18 miles. 2 weeks. Every time, there's always like 2 weeks. So that was probably like my second parlay into distance running. Like I thought at the time was big distance running. I actually did pretty well. I actually age placed in that one. That's where I knew that I might actually have a niche in ultra distance running. Second heart surgery turned into a third heart surgery. Again, 2 weeks before the same 50K the next year. So I had another heart surgery 2 weeks before I ran a 50K again. So I keep going out and running these 50Ks after heart surgeries, which is, I know, it's insane, but the doctor's like, hey, a week after your heart surgery, go back to normal activity, right?
juggling 50Ks.
Well, right, yeah. So because I couldn't get my heart rate up over 120 beats a minute, it took me again another like 7 or so hours to run this 50K. I ended up having, what was that, third heart surgery? One more heart surgery. So I had four total from 2011 to 2012. It was insane.
Wow.
And in 2012, I had seen obstacle course racing for the first time. And I tried a race called Warrior Dash, which is still around. And it's basically like an entry-level obstacle course race. If it's something you were like, well, I don't know if it's going to be something for me, go out and try it. I ran it. Some kid said to me while we were on Warrior Dash, have you ever tried a Spartan race? And I was like, no, what's that all about? And he's like, you know, it's extreme. You do 30 burpees every time you miss an obstacle. So 2012, I went out, and that's when I actually ran my first obstacle course race. And that's ended up how I actually acquired most of my sponsors because of obstacle course racing.
Wow.
I know, right? I'm sitting here just trying to digest all of this.
Oh, yeah. In the interim, I've also had gallbladder removals, all kinds of fun stuff. So you can imagine. Oh, I have really bad arthritis. The other year, a month out from a marathon, I had a titanium screw put in my right foot because of arthritis. So good times.
So you're iron, dude.
Yeah, yes.
Good gravy, man. I have my hand on my head right now just listening to you. I'm like, oh my gosh, that is quite the story. And we're not even done yet. And this is over. A couple years, 2-3 years.
How long is your show tonight? Because we could go for hours if you want. But yeah, this is over the course of a year and a half.
We might have to rebook you. Yeah. Oh, just even a year and a half. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So let's talk about that a little bit. So this is all the things that happened leading up to or getting you in the midst of being a runner, a racer, getting recognition. So where's the part then that you got connected with P4P and how, I mean, I'm sure our listeners heard you say, and, you know, obstacle course races are how I got most of my sponsors.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's an area that a lot of natural bodybuilders, the serious ones are very interested in. So, yeah, I'm interested in how all of that played out for you and how you attracted sponsors. Clearly, you're winning, but then, you know, how that just continued to grow for you.
Yeah, sure. Actually, I have not won a single podium on a Spartan race.
Oh, my God.
Not even near a podium. But what had happened was basically, I got into obstacle course racing because, like I said, I saw it. It looked interesting. At the time, you know, I'd now run an ultra marathon. I was scheduled to run my second ultra marathon. I thought, I want to keep pushing myself to challenge myself. Basically, I had the mentality, and it's a sick mentality, and it's actually an illness-type mentality that I've been trying to steer away from, was I don't want to get fat again. And And I know that was a sick mentality to have, because a lot of people consider that to be like a disease. You know, you look at yourself in the mirror and you think, oh, I look fat, even though you're not. So in the course of not wanting to balloon up and get heavy, I was looking for more things to push the boundaries. So I'd done the 18K, the 50K the 50K race the couple months before. And I saw this, you know, like I said, Warrior Dash and Spartan race. Well, while I was at Spartan race, a couple people were saying about how they had these sponsors, and some of them had like shoe sponsors and just, you know, things that they would see necessary to actually train and race. So necessary evils that they would need during the race, shoes, clothing, supplements, et cetera, et cetera. I actually hooked up with a company initially called Athletics 8. They are a compression gear company. They're now called Marana Sport. They're in an interim with their athletes right now. They have signed Ryan Atkins, I believe. I think Michael Mitchell's going to yell at me, but I don't know who the other athletes are. But they're in an interim right now. So Athletics 8 is actually how I got the nickname The Hound, because I used to write nicknames on the gear. So whenever you show up to a race, they would go, oh, that's so-and-so. We'd have like a brand tag, so it would be synonymous with Athletics 8. So the reason I got the Hound nickname is because basically like a hound, like on the hunt, when you release the dog on the word go, they don't stop. You're going to either have to pull their like dead body off the track, or when they're done. And that's basically me. You know, when I'm done, I'm done. Or, you know, you're going to have to pull me off the course because I'm not going to quit. So ironically, and you guys are going to know him, an Athletics 8 teammate of mine, Kenneth Holt Terrell, was sponsored by P4P Muscle at the time. So I met up with Kenneth Terrell, a good friend of mine, and we got to talking, and he said, why don't you try P4P? And I actually, rest is history, I got in with Chad Adamovich, and you know, the rest is history. Here I am, P4P Muscle. They realized I have a gift for gab and said, hey, we're going to give you a podcast. So, I mean, that's kind of where I am right now. But the way to get the sponsors was basically you had to put down good race times. So you had to run well. You don't have to win, but you have to be the person out there that has dedication, heart, you know, integrity too. Integrity is a big thing when you want to become a sponsored athlete. And we all know that, you know, it's not about cheating, and it's not about, you know, being better than the next guy. It's about helping your fellow man out there and just being an all around decent athlete. So a combination of all that, I think I might have a good sales pitch too. So I think that's how we got here. That's how we're here.
Wow. Where do you start? For one, let's clear the record. When you say your gear, you're talking about actual equipment, not drugs. Two, when you say you have heart, after four surgeries, okay, how much do you have left? And three, my goodness, Dale actually chimed in pretty late, and he would like to know, with your profession, where do you find the time to do all of this?
Oh, good question. So yes, by gear, I do mean sneakers and apparel. I do not mean narcotics, Kalen. We are all drug-free athletes, so I do everything natural. I don't take anything enhanced. Obviously, I use P4P Muscle, which I absolutely love, and I don't get any of the bloaty or anything like that. So the way I find the time, basically, is I don't have kids, so I have dogs and things of that nature, but I work now 8 p.m. to 4 a.m. dominantly. After I got promoted to lieutenant, but I was 3 to 11. So basically I would wake up, eat breakfast, and then 3 days a week, I would run two to two and a half hours each day. And then the other 4 days a week would occupy, 3 days a week would occupy weightlifting and CrossFit. So, I mean, if you can get out, and you said it's Dale, Kalen?
Yes.
Dale, if you can get out even an hour a day, I mean, that's fantastic. Cause it's very, I want to say it's uncharacteristic for an actual athlete to go out more than an hour a day. Me being an endurance athlete, it's uncharacteristic to be out less than an hour a day. So an average athlete or an average person that wants to work out, an hour is actually a big amount of time for someone. So, I mean, if you're doing an hour, then you're doing a phenomenal amount of work.
So let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, what does your training regimen look like? I know that you had made reference earlier that you're a Planet Fitness guy, so you do spend some gym time. But I think I've seen in the videos you have some equipment in your home too. So, I mean, what does your training regimen look like? What does it take to be an extreme – I'm calling you an extreme racer because – I have no desire to run anything further than a 5K, and I'm not going to run it quickly. So the things that you do are amazing to me. So, So what does that training regimen look like?
All right, so Planet Fitness, and I was joking with Kalen about this. Kalen's a monster. So Kalen's the guy that I would go to like a Gold's Gym or something like that and go, good God, look at this guy. This guy is huge, right? So I go to Planet Fitness, and I'm the one that they look at and go, look at this guy. He's huge, right? You know, 175 pounds of me. No, I joke. Planet Fitness happens to be in my Blue 365, actually. So it's open 24 hours a day. I actually enjoy it because I don't feel like I'm being stared at. Like, a lot of people see me lifting weights and they go, oh, yeah, right, he can't be lifting a lot or whatever. I seem to have, like, weird, like, normal brute strength that I can lift. I just don't – with having a limited mobility in my left hand, I can't lift traditionally like everybody else. I can't do a flat bench because my wrist doesn't bend at all. It's almost like it's fused. So I can't do a traditional flat bench, and I, you know, I have to modify things. So if you're asking what my training regimen looks like right now, I have a 40-mile race coming up in 3.5 weeks. So on the average, 3 days a week, every other day, I run 14 miles minimum. Right now it's treadmill because I don't like to be cold. I don't like going outside when it's cold. I did get out 2 days ago at 67 degrees. So 3 days a week, it'll be 14 miles treadmill. The other 3 days a week, I used to do CrossFit, and I would Olympic lift and do just a high intensity workout for, geez, an hour and 45 minutes. But I've gone the more traditional route, such as you guys, and I'm actually back in the gym just doing straight lifting regimens. I vary every time I go to the gym. I don't go to the same thing. So I don't just go sit down and go, well, I'm going to do chest now, and I'm going to do inclines. I'm going to do, you know, traps. I'm going to do whatever. I change everything up every single time I go. So, I mean, by the time I leave, I'm sweating. I'm just hammering sweat. So I try and make it interesting if that makes sense. But lately the wife said that the butt is starting to look small again because of all my ultra running. So I've been really, really just killing the legs.
That's right. Get those glutes fired up. Operation Glutey Booty. You got to do that. You got to do that. Nobody ever wrote a rap song about a small butt.
That's right.
That is right. Okay, so Lisa wants to know how to dress to run in cold weather to keep from injuring joints. What advice do you have?
That's very, very interesting. So the good rule of thumb for Lisa is basically anything under 45 degrees requires pants. I mean, I'm not running pantsless. If you think when I say requires pants, it means you actually run in pants. It doesn't mean running shorts. So what's that, Caitlin?
I said, with you, you gotta ask.
Well, I mean, if I'm in my home, I don't want to divulge, but there may be some pants free treadmill running if it's warm enough. Just to give you guys that visual. But so what you got to remember, Lisa, is that your body's going to heat up over the course of over the run. So when you're dressing to be comfortable before you run, you're going to actually heat up excessively when you're into the actual workout. It's like any other workout. So ideally, what I try and do is I try and dress either just so I'm just if it's cold out, just slightly cold or just slightly comfortable. I'm a person that likes to run hot. So if I'm sweating and I'm warm, I prefer that over being freezing. So, I mean, don't go excessive. You don't want to be able to not be able to move, but I found a decent pair of winter weight, like leggings. Athletics 8 did not make winter weight leggings. So I used to wear them. And then a winter weight, like running pant by like Saucony, over top, and just something comfortable for like a insulated sweatshirt or something of that matter. And honestly, your body will warm up from there. Light pair of gloves because you don't want to be taking them on and off. I will be doing that in a 40 mile or in 4 weeks because it's going to be cold. So I'll start with gloves and I'll take them off. And I'll realize my hands are cold. I'll put them back on. It's going to be a long process for 6-7 hours. But, you know, just something that you're either just starting out to be minimally cold, that you can tolerate the cold, or just right, because your body will heat up and you're going to realize very quickly that you would be overdressed if you wear any more layers than that. Make sure you can move. Keep your feet warm because you're going to lose everything out of your feet and head first, all of your body heat. So keep your head warm, keep your feet warm, and I think you'll be good to go.
Okay, and Dale's back again, and he wants to know, how do you mentally prep to run that kind of distance? I think he's newbie in running.
Okay. Yeah. For ultra marathons, I'm sick this way. I like them so much that there is no mental preparation. I go into an ultra marathon, I guess, knowing that I'm going to be running my best, and if I place or if I podium or if I take an award, I take an award. That's one of the least stress-free races that I have. Dale, I'm going to tell you that every other race, I am flat out nervous to the point where I could throw up, to the point I go to the bathroom four, five, six, seven times a race. But what I tell myself, and I think this is going to help you, the only mental thing that you should be telling yourself is that you should be having fun. If it is not fun for you, you should not be doing it. If you have fun, it doesn't matter what the times are. It doesn't matter how you finish. As long as you finish and you have fun, I mean, that's the best mental preparation. When my wife sees me just looking nervous and I'm freaking out, I'm dry heaving, doing whatever, she goes, just remember, it's supposed to be fun. And every time she tells me that, I actually settle down and calm down. Good music that you're comfortable listening to while you train, listen to that before you go out and race, you know, anything to settle you down. But remember, if it's not fun, you shouldn't be doing it.
Wow, I just don't even envision you dry heaving or anything like that because of nerves.
Oh my goodness.
And I think you answered the next question that I have is, you know, that's running for 6 and 7 hours. I mean, how do you get into a zone where you can do that? I just don't have that mental capacity. I've never been able to develop what is called or what I call the runner zone. But I guess that's just something that you have, and maybe that's just something that runners have. I don't know. But I do know Lisa is back, and she has another question.
Good.
And she wants to know, what is the best compression shoe to run to run in at such long distances?
What is the best what to run in? Compression gear?
Yep, compression shoe.
Oh, shoe.
Such a thing. Shoe.
Shoe, right? Like shoes on your feet.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
I
maybe
actually,
it's not
I,
the right I, verbiage, but
yeah. Okay, so I'm gonna throw a shameless plug to my shoe sponsor right now. I run in Carson Footwear. They are natural zero drop barefoot, so there's actually no support in them at all, other than they are extremely comfortable and it's like running in slippers. That's what zero drop is. There's basically no arches. But if you're looking for an actual good trail shoe, if you're into trail running or road, Hoka One One. Everybody calls it Hoka One One. Hoka One One is a lightweight shoe with a thicker sole. So it's basically going to keep you, I guess I want to say, stress-free on your knees and ankles and joints. I mean, if you're going to transition to a zero drop like I run in, it's going to take a while. You can't just run a zero drop right away. You'll blow your Achilles out and everything. Like I said, Carson Footwear, if you are going to go to a zero drop, is the best shoe I've ever put on my foot. They have a 10-10 sole, so 10 millimeters thick. It's 10 millimeters high in the heel and 10 millimeters high in the toe, which means that basically it's zero drop. So there's no, and what I mean by zero drop, Kaylin and Desiree, is that your heel would be higher than your forefoot, causing you to actually run on your forefoot in a proper form, which are most shoes you look and they have thick heels. Carson does not have that, but again, it's one of the most comfortable zero drop shoes I've ever worn in my life. But I would say go with Hoka One One, or just go to the store and see what feels right. Nike, I used to wear Nike for a while, and I found them to be comfortable. So I know we're talking about compression shoe or whatever. If you're looking for actual compression on your feet, I wear Swiftwick socks as well. And I found them to be just right compression, and they don't give me any hot spots or anything like that. So hopefully that's like a dual-edged answer for her.
Yeah, it sounds great. I mean, from my understanding, it sounds like she's newer to the sport. She's into she runs on the street and trails. So
good.
You know, just looking to get as much information that she can. So awesome answers, and thanks for the question, Lisa.
Yeah, absolutely.
Totally off topic, but you talked about socks. Have you ever tried the Bomba socks?
No.
Have you heard of those?
I have not. Wait, Kaylin's laughing. Are you into those?
James, I'm sorry.
Are you wearing those?
No,
are you wearing those?
I love them. I love them when I work out, and it's just a different sock company, and you know, a couple of guys.
What's the name again?
From corporate America. Bombas, B-O-M-B-A-S.
Yeah, they're made of bamboo, right?
Like the song.
No, they're not. Bombas.
No, not La Bamba.
Not La Bamba. Bomba. All right, this is spiraling. So we're just gonna say this.
Are they
it's a
bamboo?
Sock. No, they're not
bamboo,
but they totally,
no?
they're not bamboo, but they totally took the sock apart and reconstructed it and added arch support, reinforced all of areas that get worn out the fastest. They just feel great on your feet. I actually like to work out in them. They're a more expensive sock, but they also give away a free pair of socks for every pair that's bought. So, to homeless individuals and things like that. So, yeah, in Bombas, I forget what language that is, but it actually means bee. So, you know, keeping busy, busy as bees and, you know, helping to support individuals in need. So, anyway, I digress. I'm going to get back to the topic
at hand. I would wink to you right now and say, Swiftwick socks does the same thing. You can't see me winking because we're on a podcast, but you know what I mean.
So, I might have to try those out too.
Decent.
Yeah, for a sock, I mean, people probably don't think about that, but after I started wearing those and then started wearing them to the gym, I'm like, oh my gosh, that does make a difference.
Hey, Troy,
I don't do a ton of cardio, but I love them.
Are you,
you know,
talking
honestly,
about the beginning because they are completely lost?
No, honestly, if you do ultra running like Lisa and Dale are asking, or just base out running, socks are very important because if you get the wrong one that slides on your feet, trust me, I've had big bubbles on the undersides of my feet before finding Swiftwick, and you know it was excruciating when you take your shoes off and have giant blisters. So you know Swiftwick keeps them. That's why I love Swiftwick; they keep them from me. But you know Bombas sounds good too, especially for. Like you said, when you guys are out there lifting, I would think that would be good for arch support and things like deadlifting and things of that nature.
Well, and I have
now, okay.
to begin with. I mean, I have
okay,
no arches, so yeah. Okay.
You live barefoot, right, Kaylin?
Hold on. Tom wants to know, since he's on his feet most of the day, is that the reason you guys are talking about the socks and support? Because, you know, he has sometimes where he's gone into the gym and, okay, when he's gone into the gym and he hadn't been able to change shoes or socks to get in the workout he needs.
Oh.
That's not how we got on that topic, but I think it's important. This is your shoe wear.
Yeah.
Your footwear is important when you're lifting, when you're working out, when you're running. Definitely. I mean, I think you would notice the difference if you do have a chance to change and you're in a more comfortable, more supportive shoe. I don't know what shoe you're wearing to work, if it's a work boot or if it's a tennis shoe of some sort. I mean, I've seen plenty of people in the gym, they come straight from work and they're still in their steel-toe work boots knocking it out.
Yeah.
And blue jeans. So, you know.
About an oven.
Yeah. Definitely.
I'm a fan. I'm a fan of wearing my zeros. I like the barefoot feel when I especially with the legs. But you know, like you said, it has to just be comfortable, really.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Now we're getting all questions about apparel.
Awesome. Okay.
Oh my goodness.
P4P muscle
okay.
apparel because we have it.
Since Dave is our guest, we'll let him start first with what the best is, and then we'll go ladies with dads, and then I'll finish up about this topic so we can get back to Dave. So, Dave, you go ahead, and then we'll get back to our regularly scheduled program.
Yeah, what's the question about apparel?
The question is dealing with the best apparel for running, and then we'll basically switch over, and Dez can cover what she likes to wear in the gym for the gym apparel, and then I'll cover the guy's side of it.
Okay. I'm going to cover both the men's and women's side of this for the running. You want something that's basically moisture wicking or very comfortable. It would be a mistake to run in something cotton, especially with all the sweat that's going on there. If you guys follow my Instagram, I don't wear shirts. A lot of the reason I just don't like to. I got in that habit from obstacle course racing, but you want to wear something comfortable and that's moisture wicking. You know, the problem with all that moisture not coming out of your clothing is it's adding all that extra weight. I mean, I know it's weight you already had on there, but it's going to be uncomfortable. It's going to cause you like pruning, basically. You know, it's almost like you're going to be like working out in a shower the entire time. You know, you also have to make sure. What's that? The other thing you want to make sure, and we'll talk about, is clothing that doesn't chafe. You can imagine what it's like running for 7 hours. You would probably chafe certain body parts that I don't know. I guess we're on a Blog Talk Radio, but I'm not going to bring up because it's, you know, graphic, but you know, men and women would chafe certain body parts that would probably be excruciating the next day. So make sure it's soft and moisture wicking.
Or that.
I said to behave.
That's right.
I said to behave. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and jump in.
Soft and moisture wicking is my answer. But, you know, something that's comfortable. You don't want, like, if you're going to run 8 hours like I do, I found that compression was real tough because it's designed to keep the muscles flat and tight. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that after 7 hours of running, your muscles want to swell excessively. So you end up looking like sausagey in a compression type gear. So something that's comfortable,
oh,
moisture wicking and anti-chafing.
Yes, I'm not saying nothing.
No, please don't. Okay, so I'm going to keep this quick. You know, as far as what I like to wear in the gym, it really all depends on what body part I'm working, because I like to see how the muscles are responding in the mirror if I have a mirror in front of me. So if I'm working legs, I'm in shorts and probably generally short shorts. If it's upper body, I'm usually in a tank top. I also heat up very quickly, so I don't like to be really hot when I work out. So anything that, you know, I can wear to keep my body temperature in the comfort zone, that just means that my workout is going to be extended that much longer for me. So,
yeah.
And you know, bodybuilders don't always look at themselves in the mirror because they're vain. It's because they're actually watching what we're doing. A lot of it has to do with form, how your muscle is responding. It's very visual. And when they talk about that mind-muscle connection, it's a real thing. So I'm not going to dive off the deep end in this because this show is about the hound and it's not about me or bodybuilding per se.
Hey, anything that can help anybody
so,
out, I'm good with.
There you go.
Anything
that will
help
like
anybody
said,
out.
So, and that's awesome. That's awesome. And I already gave my plug for socks because actually a lot of people don't think about it, but wearing a really thin sock, I don't like it. So I actually go with thicker socks. I like my Bombas. I like the reinforcement. I like to have that little extra cushion around the arch because I don't have one. So that's what I like to wear.
Yeah.
And I also, if I'm running, now my shoes, because I am flat foot, I do like to have the little thicker heel. It just works better for my knees that way. Everybody's not that way. So, I mean, as far as a tennis shoe, if I know I'm doing hit or something like that, I will wear, you know, a shoe that does have more of a reinforced heel and arch. If I'm not planning on doing cardio, I might wear a lighter shoe. It just all depends on what I've got going on. Kalen?
Yep.
Okay, for me, you know, I want to say hound because it's already taken. I'd say I'm more like a wolf. Well, when I get in the gym, I'm already set to go, so I'm already sweating when I walk through the door like Pavlov dogs when they're getting ready to eat. So it's pretty much shorts. And I think the sock issue I used to have, but I hadn't thought about it until Dave brought it up, is where, you know, I was more structured for getting in all of the workout that I had planned and not missing any. So sometimes I would save time from changing shoes and just go from work straight to the floor with working out because – you know, before we started wearing the steel toes, or it was more to the point of just for comfort, and my work shoes actually matched him atmosphere. So without the right kind of sock, the bottom of the foot, but, you know, other than that. And that's that.
Are you done? Oh, okay. Okay, sounds good. So, I don't know, good questions, guys. I mean, I wasn't exactly expecting it to take that turn, but that's what Real Talk is, and that's how our interviews are structured. So awesome. Glad to have you participating and joining in. So, David, you're getting ready for another race coming up, 3 weeks, 40 miles. What does the rest of your year look like? Is this just kind of a warm-up for your schedule? How many races do you typically get in a year?
Typically, I'll try and run at least 5 or 6 ultra marathons. They take a little time to recover. You're talking like 2 weeks at least. I usually run within 3 or 4 days of one, but I mean, the toll it takes on your body. So in the interim, what I normally do is I play all of my races by ear. So if I go, you know what, I haven't had a race in 2 weeks, I'll run something. I'll look things up and just kind of go. So I usually run a minimum of around 10, 15 races a year, and then an upwards of, you know, geez, I don't know, 20 plus, 30 or so, you know, 5Ks, every distance imaginable. If it's out there, I'll run it. But this year, I'm actually looking into probably doing a lot more marathons, road marathons. So I might do a couple of those this year and look for some heavier distance road races as well as my trail ones.
So we talked about your exercise regimen. How do you manage your nutrition? And then I guess I'm really curious on race day, or maybe it's the night before. Do you carb load at night? Is it in the morning? How do you run for 7 hours and not just totally run out of steam?
You know, I kind of carb load. What I do with my version of carb load, now the last race I paid dearly for doing it, a 50K, I had to take a natural break in the woods, and that cost me 5 minutes, so it cost me a sub-5-hour race.
Bye.
I had, and you're going to figure out what kind of natural break that was in the woods, because the night before I had four McDonald's sausage and cheese burritos.
Oh, just stop right there. Just stop with McDonald's, and we know.
I know. So it's calories and it's carbs. So I don't eat the best the days before races, but I will not eat those ever again before an ultra marathon. Like I said, it cost me 5 minutes. But honestly, you know, I'll go out and I'll carb load the night before, because the carb is my fuel. Usually for the first 10 or 15 miles. After that, I'm going to have to start relying on everything that I take with me in the race or aid stations. Race morning, people are going to be surprised, but most mornings on race mornings, I eat a bowl of Fruity Pebbles or Mini Wheats. So sugar and carbs. Yeah. Everybody's like, what, you eat that? How do you not throw up? No, it's what I'm used to. So it's what basically is my superstition, I want to say, on race morning is a bowl of Fruity Pebbles.
So, and that's, you know, and I've read different things about carb loading in the morning versus at night, and I'm not a runner, so I really have no base for comparison as to what is better, but I just find it interesting that there are different
sure.
I guess perspectives on that, but so it actually it's carb loading in the morning the day before versus the night, and I don't exactly remember what strategy was or thinking was behind that, but I've seen it a couple of different times. So I didn't know if, you know, when you carb load at night, if your body actually has enough time to digest properly for you to even really utilize that.
Well, that's kind of what I'm hoping it doesn't do, honestly, and
okay.
It probably doesn't work for everybody that way, but when I'm in a 7-8-hour race, I want it to start digesting probably in the mid-race to burn off as fuel. So
okay.
that ends up being the 3 or 4 bathroom breaks before the start of the race and things like that, just trying to get my body to not feel, you know, like bloaty or anything like that. But, you know, it's digesting, and it'll probably fully start digesting in the middle of the race, which is just basically just kind of keeps me going the entire way.
Sure, sure. Dale wants to know what your total calorie intake is in general. I mean, I guess you can talk daily or race day or the night before. Or
oh, my goodness.
If you even know.
Oh, my goodness. I used to count my calories, especially when I had the heart surgery and things of that, and when I was trying to lose the weight. Dale, good question. I know I probably intake over probably almost 4,000 a day. I can tell you that when I'm on a treadmill, I've watched my calories lately, and for 13.1, I would probably burn in a 13 mile run, I'll probably burn 2,300 calories in that hour and 20 minutes that I'm on the treadmill. So obviously, I want to almost double my intake each time. So it's insane. But I don't know, like during a race, it's important to take a lot of calories in. I'm guilty of not taking in calories a lot on my races, but I honestly don't know. I know it's over 4,000 a day.
That's a lot of food.
Yeah,
yes.
It is.
That's a lot of food.
I have another question, but this one is kind of a he's getting put on blast by his wife, Sylvia.
Oh.
And it's for Travi Poo, because Travi Poo is a new runner. And,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I'm putting it out there, buddy, because that's how she put it. So
Travi Poo.
His name's Travis. His name's Travis. But since he's scared to ask the question, his wife asked
him.
Yeah, so she's basically putting him on blast. So Travi Poo wants to know, your day after the rain, the run,
yes.
after the rain.
Yes.
Yeah. But anywho, after the run, what is your day basically like?
Day after, especially an ultramarathon, is excessively sore. So it's a lot of like when I wake up, it's a lot of stiff muscles. I mean, you can imagine running for 7 hours or working out for 7 hours. So very stiff. The day after begins the actual the real recovery period. So if the muscles are real bad, I'll actually roll my muscles the day after. I'll make sure I take a lot of fluids. The water and hydration is the most important thing to recover the muscles quickly. I will actually, a lot of times, and this is weird, sometimes the day after I'll be in the gym. I'll be in the gym lifting my legs or lifting my body to basically stretch my muscles. Now, it's nothing 100% what I would normally lift for weight, but I would actually just go there just to kind of go through the routine, just to basically stretch my muscles and work everything out just to kind of get back on track. 2 days after, I'll still be it's 2 days after. I'm sorry, day after I rest. 2 days after, I'll be in the gym. 3 days after, I'll do a light run. And then by day 5 or 6, I'll be back up to my full regimen again. So take it easy the day after a race, especially a big race. You're not a hero if you go back out and run and recover. I mean, if you're sore, then listen to your body and let it recover. I know a lot of people that'll go race a race like that and just go break it out the next day and run and race. And a month from now, they'll say, oh, my Achilles hurts or my knees are bothering me. You know, there's no point being a hero. Just let your body recover and go out and take it easy the day after a race. So that's always been my philosophy.
Cool. Sounds good. So we talk a lot about, you know, different promoters, different organizations, different shows, ones that we like, ones that we think do exceptional jobs. Are there race promoters that you like better than others?
Yeah, I actually just signed up. The race that I'm doing now, it's a local race by Stefan Weiss. It's called Uber Endurance Sports. He always does an amazing job. He was an ultra runner himself at one point. He still does ultra run, but not like he used to. He puts on a great series. And if you're ever – I'm in Reading, Pennsylvania. So if you're ever in the Philadelphia area, he does a lot of races out there. You know, everything just runs smoothly. Been doing it for a long time. The aid stations are fantastic in ultra marathons with him. I mean, they have cheeseburgers and bacon and potatoes and all kinds of anti-inflammatories and things like that. So I really, really enjoy Uber Endurance Sports races. If you're talking nationally, if you're going to go out and do an obstacle course race, I do like the Spartan Race Series. They put on a really good race series, Warrior Dash. So, you know, it's basically whatever works for you, but I really do like the Uber Endurance, which is he does everything German themed, except for these two races. This first race that I'm running is called the Naked Bavarian. Has nothing to do with running naked. We'll get that off the board right now. He calls it that because he doesn't give you any swag. You don't get a shirt. You get a finisher. This year he's doing a finisher growler. But you basically pay per mile. So 40-mile race, I paid $40 for the race, which isn't horribly bad. So there's no swag. The next one I'm running is called the Naked Prussian. Again, not nude, but, you know, it's because it's low swag. So I really like his ideas, and he's just all about the run and, you know, just being out in the environment. So if you can find a race organizer wherever you live like that, I mean, you know, stick with it because you're going to find out they're going to do a lot of good stuff.
Well, getting back to people, because I guess he's a little nervous for asking these questions.
It's okay.
Anywho, his question is about, you know, is the Spartan comparable to the Tough Mudder or any other local kind of event that?
Oh, Travis. I would have been really mad at you 2 years ago to ask me if Spartan Race is the same as Tough Mudder. No, actually, they're comparable in that you're doing obstacles. Tough Mudder sets themselves aside because they are actually not a race. They are an event, so they don't time their race. It's 10 miles, and you do the obstacles at your own leisure. Spartan Race is actually a competition. It's timed, and if you fail obstacles, you pay for failing obstacles. So you have to do 30 burpees. And you can imagine that, you know, 5, 10, 15 miles. I once ran a 33-mile Spartan Race. I did 280 burpees in the race. It was 14 hours long. Yeah, 14 hours I did 280 burpees in addition to running 33 miles of terrain. So, yeah, definitely not like – but if you're talking on a grand-scale obstacle course, yes, go out and run either because you're gonna enjoy both. So, yeah, I ran the Ultra Beast for Spartan Race, and the day before we ran the Beast, it was all in Killington, Vermont. So the Beast was the Beast took 7 hours. It was 15 miles on a Saturday. I went in the hotel room. I bundled up. I recovered for 6 hours and went out and ran the 33-mile Ultra Beast. So 6 hour gap in between, I ran 33 miles the next day, another Spartan Race. So you can imagine.
That's crazy.
All obstacles. A lot of carrying. Yeah, it snowed too. I was soaking wet running. I remember going up the mountain with 3 miles left and it started snowing while I was soaking wet. I just swam. So you can imagine.
Man. Well, but you know, I'm coming after this show. It's not crazy anymore. It's just normal. I'm going to expect this kind of behavior from you now.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
So
it's a normal day.
So it is a normal day. So we've had some beginner listeners on our show. And I know that they would love to tune into your show because you talk to a lot of veterans and just different up-and-comers that are racers like you. So where can they find you? How can they find you if they want to tune in to Beyond Ultra?
Oh, well, that's so we're on Blog Talk Radio. You guys can find us on Blog Talk Radio right now. It's going to be / P4P Studio 3. So I assume you guys are like one or two. I assume you're one because you guys are like the pioneers of P4P talk radio. So P4P, what's that?
You don't have to assume.
Well, I don't want to call you number one. I have my own show. Come on. That's not fair. No, honestly. Oh, you're killing me. So you guys can find us there. If you guys want to check out my Instagram page, I go by Run Hound Run. A lot of times right before my shows, I'm posting. I can't do it. I'm not going to howl because I'll hurt everybody's ears. I'm probably already hurting people's ears now. Run Hound Run. I post on Instagram about a week out before the show. So you can check out the shows there. Also, I have a Facebook page. It's also Run Hound Run and Twitter, Run Hound Run. It's just really easy to just go same across the board. So you can find them all there. Actually, I don't know if you guys saw, I'm trying to get Katie Austin. She's the daughter of Denise Austin. Denise Austin was the famed 1990s fitness guru. She had her own fitness tapes and, you know, Body by Denise Austin.
Yep.
You saw it everywhere.
Yep.
Katie
yep.
is actually her
I remember.
Daughter. Yep, Katie is actually her daughter who is also doing her own great things in exercise. So we've been communicating back and forth. I put a teaser out there on Instagram that she'll probably be on the show. So she's very busy with what she does. So I'm trying to get her on. So, I mean, just some things going on there. I've been in talks with a bunch of big ultra runners, real big professionals in the ultra running community. And it's just tough to sometimes get these guests because, you know, they have busier schedules than I do. So you can imagine. But that's where you can check me out. Or sorry,
awesome.
Check out my stuff, not check me out. I mean, well, you could check me out there, but just check out my stuff. Check me out at Planet Fitness.
Yeah, check him out at
I'm the real big guy.
Where he's,
I'm the real
where
big
he's
guy.
The big buff guy. Where he's the big guy. Love it. You know, and I would ask you what your favorite P4P protein flavor is, but I think you already know that. And it's not going to work in my favor, so I won't ask you that. But what I will ask you is if you would like to take the next couple of minutes to give. Kaylin. If you would like to take the next couple of minutes to give shout-outs to anyone and everyone who's been a supporter of you on your trek.
Oh, my goodness.
Dave do his...
Yeah.
Kaylin.
Sorry, Kaylin, I didn't mean.
David's turn.
Oh no! Hey, I'm gonna give a shout out number one to my best buddy Kaylin and my main girl Desiree. They are my biggest supporters and fans, and without them, all of this would not be possible. And Snickerdoodle P for P Way.
Oh,
without Snickerdoodle P for P Way, this wouldn't be possible.
That's right.
Oh my goodness. All right.
Cute.
So, yeah, I do the same things on my shows. I actually signed on a couple new sponsors this year. One is Noon Hydration. They're real easy to find. You can get them at Target, you can get them at Rite Aid, you can get them at local running stores. Basically, a enhancer for your water that basically keeps you from cramping and gives you the energy you need to put out all your endurance during the races. That's just one. I use Alter Ego Extreme on my big races, mixed with branched chain amino acids. Yeah. Extreme. Yeah. So, I probably look like I could see sound when I race, but yeah, I mix Alter Ego Extreme with, Fruit Punch branched chain aminos. I love Fruit Punch chain reaction. I'm like addicted to it. I was just saying that last night in the gym. I'm addicted to Fruit Punch branched chain.
Look at my muscles.
That's right. Look at me. I'm the big guy drinking Fruit Punch branched chain.
That's right. I'm not a girly man.
I always go, every time right, I'm go I'm there, done. I'm like... So, do you know the way to the treadmills? You know, like Tommy Boy when he's like, "Do you know where the weight room is?"
Yeah, I gotcha.
I can't flex my toes though. I would like to be flexing my toes. Do you know the way to the treadmills? Yeah, good stuff. So obviously, we know the main sponsor here is P4P Muscle. I love you guys. I would never stray. So just so we are clear on that. Wink, wink, JB. Mm-hmm. You guys are really getting my personality. You would think I had Alter Ego Extreme before I started this.
Well, we know your alter ego for sure now.
Oh, yeah, my goodness. Chatterbox?
So
couple real long-term sponsors that have been with me, Sentence to Life. They, they're a big fan of having hardships in your lifetime and then overcoming them. So using them for positive and basically like my life story, they were fascinated and I signed on with them. So you always see me wearing some kind
of sentence
for life
apparel. Hold on. What's the name of that sponsor again?
Sentence to Life.
And you're a cop.
I am. I know, right? Yeah. I almost came up with the name one time. I almost used the nickname one time, but I thought, nah, people out in California know what that is. Oh, goodness. So, you know, Sentence to Life has been a real big proponent with me. Greg Munitz is the owner of the company. Yeah, I know. It's ironic, right? That's why I don't ever tell anybody I'm a cop, see? So, couple new ones. You guys are killing me. See how I'm trying to get over it?
keep going. We're sorry.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just messing. I'm just playing. I'm just. Well, hey, at least I don't have a brand called like the Pig Stop or something like that. Come on.
Right.
Yeah, that would be bad.
I can say it. It's okay. another company I just signed on with last year, about a year. It's been over a year now. Is Orange Mud. And they are the ones that, if you look at my photos on Instagram, you'll see it's the bottle hydration on my back.
Gotcha.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kaylin.
No, I was thinking when you said orange, and I'm not going there. I'm just not going there.
You mean orange button? Never mind.
Yeah. All right, guys. So I hate to cut this short, but we are very quickly running out of time, so I just want to say
Ooh.
Orange Run, Run Hound Run is where you can find him. We'll definitely have to have him back, but on behalf of myself, the Hound, Kaylin, P4P, your body is a temple, so let's build it.
Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa.
P4P Real Talk. Bye.